Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
PixelSip is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts, who have been with us since the very beginning. It's where we learned how to make podcasts, radio, and video. If you're interested in a creative degree in games, sound, film, journalism, or maybe you'd like to mix and match, you can head to murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting PixelSift. Hello and welcome to episode 113 of Pixel Sift, your fortnightly look into the indie games of Australia and around the world. Joining me tonight is my co-host, Johnny. How you doing, man?
Very good. I'm feeling quite spooky with my lighting today, so...
Yeah, dude, something's got to be done about that.
Yep.
And our guest today is Daniel Elston from Elston Studios. Hey, Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Mitch. Hi, Gianni. Thank you for having me.
No worries. And yes, Daniel is here to talk about his game, Guile and Glory, Firstborn. But before we get to that, what's up, Johnny?
So, I don't know if you were on the internet this weekend, but I sure was. So we'll be having a look at what was definitely the internet sensation. If you're vaguely related to anything to do with games, it's the charity stream that was run by H Bomber Guy, aka Harry Brewis, that went above and beyond in terms of duration and money raise. It was kind of mind-blowing.
Excellent. All right, let's get started.
Mitch, what's Discord?
Discord is an online chat service that most gamers use. Incidentally, you can also use it to talk to us at pixelsiv.com.au/discord.
Yeah, you can talk about episodes, you can talk about upcoming topics, you can probably even coerce Mitch into playing a game with you online.
That's not going to happen.
That is going to happen. You're doing it. I'm saying that's happening. Sorry.
Yeah, well...
Join Discord.
You should grow your beard back.
pixelsif.com.au/discord.
See, one of the things has happened. I have got you to play games with people, Mitch, but I haven't grown my beard back.
Yeah, so. You didn't grow the beard back. I'm just like, yeah, that's the promo I use whenever we are on the show together. Yeah.
One you win, one you don't. So last weekend, a Twitch streamer by the name of H Bomber Guy, aka Harry Brewis, began a stream with two simple goals. One, to beat Donkey Kong, and two, to raise awareness, but he ended up achieving much more than that. So the background on this story is there is a famous comedy writer who called Graham Linehan, who has done things like Father Ted and the IT Crowd, and he's just started becoming a bit of like a sort of a bit of a troll, but he's had like a few problems with transgender people, and he decided to go after the charity called Mermaids, which is a charity that supports transgender young people in the UK. They receive money from their national lottery, which is kind of, I guess it's just like a lottery fund that supports them to sort of run their services. So H Bomber Guy basically started up the stream as a way to spite Linehan and kind of give money to Mermaids. So it started, it was, I think the goal was pretty low. To raise money for that. Mitch, do you know how much the goal was originally?
I think the goal was about $400 to $600. It wasn't nearly as much as they pretty much got, which is almost $500,000.
Yeah, so it lasted for 57 hours and 48 minutes.
Yeah, it also wasn't it wasn't meant to go for that long either.
It just kept going bigger and bigger and bigger, and crazy like celebrity guests jumped on board. John Romero, who created the Doom series, came out. Jim Sterling, Chelsea Manning, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as well jumped in, the famous New York senator who's young and cool that everyone likes on the internet. So it just became this huge, huge thing. And yeah, raised close to $500,000. I think this you can still donate, but it's a really fascinating thing to talk about. Now, Daniel, I know you didn't get a chance to watch much of the stream, but what do you think about like this sort of effort, this sort of like raise money because of spite?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, like you said, I missed most of the stream. I actually was just in my little game dev bubble, and this kind of just like went way over my head until a couple of days later. But tuning in, I thought it was really, you know, spite gets things done, whatever else you say of it. And I think it's just wonderful to see that people in the gaming community can affect such a positive change and do so much good. And I'm really kind of disappointed by Lenihan's actions just in that position of kind of influence as a writer for like such prominent TV shows, to be kind of wielding that in a way that's quite destructive. I was saddened kind of to hear about that, and really, really delighted that H Bomber Guy was able to just kind of swoop in and start up this stream, which started small and then a whole bunch on board, and it just kind of snowballed into something really, really great.
I mean, this is the power of broadcasting over the net. It allows us to do what we do. And it is one of the things that makes PixelSiv so great. It's the same reason why H Bomber Guy can do what he does. And I think that, and spite, no spite, I think this is just an example of young people using technology and it favoring them, because that's just, we can use it to get voices heard. Like we use it to get to help indie game developers be heard. He used it to speak out in his own little manner, and it is being recognized as a legitimate form of or a place where messages are developed and broadcast.
Do you know what's really funny as well is Gray and Linehan actually inadvertently boosted the stream's popularity because he started talking about it. So it became this big thing, a bit like the Streisand effect they talk about, where like when you're trying to suppress something and you accidentally like blow it up massively on the internet. So yeah, I think it's
can
really
we get him to tweet about us?
No, I don't want him to tweet about us. Please leave us alone. Don't want to get involved with that. So yeah, we've got a comment from Benzene Machine over on YouTube. It says technology is the way of the world today. I think it's really good to see that sort of stuff being used for a good purpose. If you just tuned in, if you're just watching us, this is Pixel Sift. We're an indie game interview podcast. Our guest this week is Daniel Elston, and we're talking about the Donkey Kong 64 charity stream that H Bomber Guy, also known as Harry Brewis, started this weekend. It was trying to raise awareness, but also raising a heap of money for the transgender support charity Mermaids in the UK, after Graham Linehan, who was a prominent writer of many British TV shows you would know, like The IT Crowd and Black Books, decided to try and get them to lose their national lottery funding. So yeah, it's a fascinating sort of example of the internet. And I think one of the really good ways that the internet kind of works in a beautiful, beautiful sort of supportive way. And I also think it's really fascinating as well how that all these celebrities were able to just kind of jump straight into it as well. I think that's one thing that we might have sort of like televised telethons. I don't know if you have any over in Melbourne, Daniel, but we have a big one that happens in WA, which raises a whole bunch of charity. And part of the effect is that you have a whole bunch of celebrities kind of pop up and do like funny little skits and things like that. But that they were all able to kind of be involved in this. So Chelsea Manning and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and, you know, Jim Sterling and John Romero were all able to just kind of be part of that process.
Yeah, look, I think that's one of the great things about just kind of sharing and communicating through the internet and on a digital platform like this. It's so much easier to bring people in to kind of just on short notice pull together something really quite remarkable, where, as you say, celebrities and people from all walks of life can kind of come together and stand forward for a cause they believe in. And that's what we saw happen. I think that's...
Yeah, I think it's definitely very interesting, and it's a good, I guess, a good example of the way that the internet and games can be used to benefit everyone. Really good campaign. Anything else to add, Mitch?
Yeah, I think that's all that needs to be said about that. I think I must reiterate that, like, I love the fact that the internet is at a stage where we can now do things like this.
All right. Well, I think it's time to move on to the feature of our show today, and that's the interview with Daniel. We'll be right back.
Hey there. If you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
Now, Daniel Elston is joining us. He is the project lead programmer at Elston Studios, and he's here to talk about Guile and Glory Firstborn. So thanks for joining us, Daniel.
Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm here to talk about Guile and Glory Firstborn. Guile and Glory Firstborn is a turn-based tactical RPG with a bit of a puzzle twist for the PC. We tend to pitch it as Into the Breach meets Golden Axe. So you've got that kind of turn-based tactics-esque combat where you're using the environment to take out enemies exclusively in the case of Firstborn, but set in a kind of Conan-esque fantasy world, very much inspired by games like Golden Axe.
Excellent. And so who is this game for? Like who do you picture playing your game?
That's a great question. And look, as a developer, you always hope you're going to appeal to as wide a swathe of the people as possible. I think for us, though, our focus has been older gamers, like people, you know, getting towards the end of their 20s, like myself, and much older, like into their 30s, 40s, even 50s or 60s, or even later. There's a few out there in that age bracket as well. And just as, for myself at least, getting later into life, I find I have less time now to commit to like really long gaming sessions consistently. And speaking to a lot of our players, we found that as well, that just strategy games and tactical RPGs like Guile and Glory Firstborn can have that appeal of being something you can play for a little bit. And then, you know, if you need to take a call or do something, you can get up and do that. And the game's kind of waiting and it doesn't really break the flow too much. And that's been a real design tenet for us, to kind of have these scalable session times. So if you want to play for 5-10 minutes, you can get something out of the game. But on those occasions where you do have a couple of hours to sit down and really sink your teeth in, Guile and Glory will have content to support that as well.
Is just on that sort of like pick up and play sort of design that you've got there, have you done that because your life has changed and now you don't have as much time to sit there and play games as long as you'd like?
Look, yes, I have to say that has been a factor. Just like, it's given me a very different perspective on what it is like to game kind of, you know, once you're out of school, once you're out of uni. Weirdly, I think the thing that's killed my gaming time so completely is being a game developer. It is a job that does not, unfortunately, allow a lot of downtime, especially with a small indie project like this. It's just a lot of work and it's not spread between a lot of people. And I think really at any scale, the games industry is just known for some really grueling hours.
Now, if you're just joining us, you're watching Pixel Sift. It's a weekly, I guess it's a fortnightly podcast where we interview indie game developers from Australasia. Today, we're talking to Daniel Elston. He's from Elston Studios. We're talking about Guile and Glory. If you've got any questions as well, we're watching the chat, so you can put your questions in there and ask Daniel and we will put them to him. I can see a lot of inspiration, and we were talking a little bit earlier about how the aesthetic of the game really strongly draws from those sort of 90s era games. And I remember, like, for me, the thing that really struck me actually was the mouse pointer, and just seeing the mouse pointer in the game was something that was really nostalgic for me. Can you tell me about how you kind of capture that aesthetic while also kind of bringing it to a modern game design?
So I'd like to say we have a really well-written and well-thought-out document that details all the points to hit, and that we refer to that and everything runs smoothly. We couldn't be further from the case. Just in capturing that, or recapturing that kind of retro aesthetic and bringing it into a kind of modern framework, for us has been a lot of trial and error. We have just gone through a great many iterations on area designs, character designs, animation styles, and just kind of UI formats, slowly kind of playtesting, talking to our players and finding out kind of what works.
And what sort of things, I guess, have been some of the, you talked a little bit about Golden Axe and you've spoken about Into the Breach, but what other things have you sort of incorporated into this game?
So I guess Guile and Glory at its root stems from my great love for tactics games growing up. I loved Brigandine, Shining Force, Final Fantasy Tactics, Vandal Hearts, Fire Emblem, you name it. That was just my jam back in the day. And I guess what we've tried to do with Garland Glory Firstborn is capture a lot of the elements that we really loved in those turn-based tactical RPGs, but put a modern spin on it with the puzzle-inspired combat that kind of, I guess, using the battlefield has always been a key part of tactics games, and we just wanted to really emphasize that by eliminating direct damage and making the combat exclusively utilize the environment, at least for the player.
When was that decision made? Because when we play games, we're directly influencing the combat ourselves. But in Guile and Glory, it's exclusively you use the environment to take down your enemies. When did you decide that wanted to be the focus?
Day one. First day of prototyping. And the story behind it is a little bit of a silly one. But looking back, I'm very glad it played out this way. I was doing the thing they tell you never to do, which is turning a last year of tertiary course project into a commercial venture. Through the Academy Attainment, we had our final kind of assessment, which was to make a game project. And I wanted to carry that right through the Academy's excellent incubator program and straight on to the public. And my business partner at the time, who's since left and gone on to do his own cool things, was a huge fan of environmental combat, but hated tactics games. So I was coming from my own position as the programmer and producer, I was like, given the skills, I can deliver a tactics game. I'm confident of that and not much else. So I have to find some way to sell him on this. And it was actually playing Golden Axe. It's combination of like really gruelingly tough enemies and sort of easily exploitable AI and environmental hazards that I kind of was like, you can make a strategy game out of this. And I pitched it to him and he was a little reluctant at first, but we did a little bit of very early prototyping, started coming together, and that's we just went from there.
It does seem like a very nice entry into the strategy genre, because I'm definitely not a strategy gamer. The closest thing I think I've come to playing is StarCraft. So is that something you considered? Like, this might be the first time some people have played a strategy game?
Yes, look, absolutely. It actually, I thought going in that would really not be what Garland Glory was good at, because, you know, that you can't brute force the combat. You have to use the environment. You have to use strategy. You can't just stock up on health potions and kind of brute force your way through a fight. Surprisingly, I was wrong. Getting people in, I've, in our playtesting, seen a lot of people who aren't normally kind of strategy game players get their heads around it really quickly and kind of quite take to the fast, you know, one hit, one kill kind of environment combat.
We've got a few comments on Twitch and on YouTube. So Ultima Odin says, I played it at PAX Oz and it was really fun. And the real Lord Munt says, me too. There was a bit of a line when I was there. And Benzene Machine over on YouTube says, using the environment for combat, that takes a lot of strategy and thinking. So is there, I guess, you know, everything's predetermined every time you load into the map, so there's like an ideal strategy through, or is there some element of randomness in the way that it goes?
So there's a bit of a question mark over that in one particular area. We are, for some of our optional side maps, we may be including some randomized elements, but for all the core story content, everything is entirely deterministic and handmade. That you will get the same map every time, the same challenges and the same resources to use, unless you've kind of wandered off and leveled up a bit, and then you'll come back stronger to face that challenge again if you do ever get stuck.
And do you, I guess, is the behavior of the enemies the same way as well, or will they adapt to where you put yourself?
Absolutely. So a really important part of our enemy design was the AI. The kind of core asymmetry of Garland Glory Firstborn is that you can't harm the enemies, but they can absolutely just walk up and whack your heroes. And that gives the AI a massive advantage. So what we wanted to kind of simulate with relatively simple AI was hubris, the arrogance of your foes not really taking you seriously as a threat. So all enemies are entirely deterministic in their behavior. If you know that enemy type well enough, you know exactly what it's going to do before it does it. And you can also use our turn order display to kind of see the order in which enemies will act. So a real veteran player can kind of see every move that's going to happen before it happens. And so then a big part of the combat is using those rules and patterns against your enemies to gain the upper hand.
I'm just looking at the game, it kind of looks like it could very easily be a tabletop game. Did you bring a lot of inspiration from board games and tabletop games into the design of this game?
Absolutely. I'm a huge Dungeons & Dragons player. I love the game. I run campaigns when I can, always playing in them. I love the grid-based kind of tactical combat that comes with that. So I've done a lot of tabletop RPGs, not only Dungeons & Dragons, other role-playing games as well. And I actually, it's funny, early on, before we got the coding pipeline running pretty smoothly, whenever we wanted to roll through new features, we actually had a like cardboard board game version of the game where we'd just test new rules. Yeah. So we'd be sitting around a table, like a desk in the office. Everyone else is like breaking out the Oculus or the Vive, and we're just there with like some bits of paper, sliding them around on a little impromptu chessboard we'd put together.
That's really cool. We've got a few more questions coming through on chat. Nerd Rowan asks, how many playable characters are there?
So confirmed at this stage, we have three playable characters that will accompany you through pretty much the entirety of the story. Once unlocked, they will be with you the whole way, and you'll pick them up in the course of unfolding the story. At this stage, we can say with certainty that there will be other characters who will join you temporarily, both AI and player controlled. And we are definitely looking to see if we can roll through one or two additional heroes. But that may be post-launch. There's question marks over that. We will definitely be announcing stuff, clearer answers on whether we'll have more than the core three.
Fremantle's own Oscar Britton asks if there is permadeath in the game.
Well, did we lose Daniel?
We may have lost Daniel there. Hopefully there's no permadeath in the podcast.
Yeah.
Hello. Can you hear me again?
Sounded good. Look, there's some pretty hilarious comments. I'm just going to read them out because it's quite funny. the real Lord Month says the kangaroo's got to the internet lines. Moody Xander is saying roll for a Wi-Fi saving throw. Ultima Odin says there's a neg modifier in Wi-Fi. And Oscar is just sorry that he just killed the connection. So.
Oh, dear. Yes, okay. I don't know what's happening, but we're just going to roll with it. Yep. So to the question of permadeath, no, there is no permadeath in Garland Glory Firstborn. And I wouldn't call it a Souls-like in any respect, but I'm a huge fan of the Souls franchise, and one thing I've kind of taken from that is that sort of philosophy of a fast turnaround and the idea that it is 100% okay to die, to try things, to mess up, watch your heroes die horribly and just kind of try again. So that's very much what we want to encourage in Garland Glory Firstborn.
We've got another question here. So this is from Just a Fat Yeti. It says, I downloaded and played the demo and really enjoyed it. The lore book was a really cool addition. In the demo, we only played against a few different types of enemies, but without revealing too much, what kind of challenges can we expect to face in the later levels of the full game?
Okay, yeah, happy to talk about that. Again, I don't want to spoil too much, but I will get into some of the details now. There are a lot more enemies than you will have fought in the demo. In fact, when we go to Early Access next month on the 16th of February through itch.io, we will be introducing another major boss fight, the Rakshasa, which is quite a different challenge to the Worm. And in fact, we tested this many, many months ago in an early pre-alpha, but that is a more human-like foe with a host of really quite nightmarish abilities to contend with. And as you venture through the world, there will be enemies ranging from really huge things like the Worm to far more formidable variations of the Drudges, another kind of lower tier Firstborn that you'll fight in the early chapters of the game. There's also, of course, a big bad evil guy who we've teased a little bit on Twitter, and that fight is in early development now, and I assure you it will be a challenge worthy of a party of fully leveled heroes by the end of the game.
Sounding very fun. Now, it's going to be out in early access on the 14th of February, is that correct?
The 16th.
16th, so you have plenty of time for Valentine's Day if you're into that. Now, if people want to find out a bit more information, they can head over to the Elston Studios website. That's elstonstudios.net. Or you can pick it up. There's a new demo that just came out this week over on the Elston Studios itch.io account there. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure, and for bearing through these technical difficulties that we've had.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure.
And that's another episode of Pixel Sift Down. Mitch, take us out, shall we?
Yeah, so thank you very much for joining us once again. This episode was produced by Scott Quigg and Fiona Bartholomaeus, and executive producer was joining me on the show, Gianni DiGiovanni. And thank you very much to Murdoch University School of Arts for supporting Pixel Sift through all the 113 episodes. If you'd like to learn more about a great creative degree, you can head to murdoch.edu.au/arts. And as always, we'll be sticking the links to the topics and all of Daniel's information about Guile and Glory down in the description of this show. And so that'll be available on www.pixelsiv.com.au. And the absolute best thing you can do to keep up with everything Pixel Siv is head to our Discord at pixelsiv.com.au/Discord if you want to keep up with everything we're doing, because we post everything there first. So,
that's... chat to Daniel, because Daniel's in there now too.
Oh, yeah, and you can talk to Daniel. He's in there now. We also have other social media pages on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, so just search Pixel Sift. And, you can get a hold of us there as well. Gianni, if people want to listen to other episodes, where can they find them?
Well, I'm going to list them for you, so get ready. your notepad.exe open.
I've got it right here.
You can go to our website to stream episodes. That's pixelsift.com.au. You can go to any podcast player in the entire planet, because all I do is download podcast players and add the Pixel Sift to it. You can go on Spotify, wherever. And if you could give us a recommendation, if you can tell a friend, if you like the show, that'd be amazing. Just go to their phone and download it. That would be really, really cool. Thank you so much for everyone who's been jumping in and chatting to us. You've got some fans in there, Daniel, I can see. Our next episode will be on the 7th of Feb.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much for watching, everyone. And we will see you next week.
See you then.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.